What's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a special edition of Rob Has a Podcast. Usually in this spot, we get together with Josh Wiggler to bring you the Wiggle Room, but Josh is not around this week, so I didn't want you guys to go a day on a Monday without a podcast. It's a rough day to begin with, so I wanted to make sure you had something in your podcast feed, and I had been trading DMs with the guy you're about to hear from today, Reynold Topher from Survivor Karamoan. He is going to be joining us to catch up, talk about what he thought about his amigo Malcolm this season. Of course, what he thinks about Andrea and what he's been up to since the season. So hope you enjoy this interview that we're about to do here today. Now, before we get to my interview with Reynold, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at TrueCar. You know, back in Survivor Karamoan, Eric Reichenbach once referred to Reynold Topher as he's like a used car salesman. And he didn't mean it in a good way, because buying a used car is not often a fun experience. That is until TrueCar got into the game, because TrueCar not only can help you buy a new car, it can also help you save money when you're buying a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking to buy a new or used vehicle, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price and a better buying experience through the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. You'll get to see on TrueCar what other people are paying for the same exact car you're looking for, down to the zip code, and know what a fair price is so you can feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick and easy car buying experience. Use TrueCar to easily find the new or used car that you want. And best of all, TrueCar users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today. He's somebody that we haven't heard from since back in the spring of 2013, about 4 years since we had him on a podcast. And when we talked to him the one time, he had to share an exit interview with one of the current game changers, Andrea Belke. Please welcome back to the podcast, Reynold Topher. Reynold, how are you?
Woohoo! Rob, I'm really excited to do this. This is long overdue.
Yeah.
Has it really been 4 years?
It really has been. It's gone by like that. I mean, I feel like that it was only a minute ago that we were talking about that whole season, and now here we are, and you and I had been sort of trading messages back and forth that, you know, Malcolm was back this season, Andrea was back this season. I don't think anybody predicted that Malcolm would not be there after only 4 weeks of the show, but that's the case. But Andrea is still there, and I thought it'd be fun to catch up. So, Reynold.
Yes, much to catch up on, much to talk about. Great season, but yeah, I'm excited.
How's everything going for you? Can you tell people what you've been up to these last 4 years since we last saw you on Survivor?
Yeah, for sure. I've been doing a spinoff show. It's called Survivor Suburbs.
Suburbs. Okay, what are you doing?
So what they do is they give you two kids, two dogs, and a mortgage, and you got to go out there and like make $1 million every 4 or 5 years, or else you get voted off. So that has been that's been my challenge.
Now,
but I love it.
If I recall, then you had gotten married, I think, in between when the show taped to when the show aired. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally true. It's actually a pretty wild story. I had met my wife before the show. But we were more just friends. She lived in Austin, Texas. I was in San Francisco, and she was a single mom. So, you know, that was a variable in the equation. And what, I don't know if you had this experience when you're on the show, but you get to get away for a month plus and unplug, and the world kind of, you see it in a different perspective when you come back. So, she had come to San Francisco to visit me again. And like, it was one of those great true love stories. And, you know, I wasn't afraid of moving to Texas and, you know, jumping into a parent role, and it's been the best decision I've ever made, man. Here we are 4 years later, happily married. We've added another baby to the family. We're just living in Austin and loving life, man.
Yeah. And when did you guys have the baby?
We had Lulu is going to be 3 on April 26th.
Okay, so congratulations. And so a lot going on now in Texas. Are you enjoying I know you were living in San Francisco before Survivor. Are you enjoying life in the suburbs as now the dad of two?
Oh, yeah, it's great. And I actually, all right, so you're the Survivor expert. I've got a trivia question for you, Rob.
Okay.
What famous Survivor lives in Austin, Texas that I may have bumped into?
Oh boy, who lives in Austin, Texas? I'm trying to think.
It's a he. It's a male. He's originally from West Texas, actually.
It's not Colby, is it?
Colby freaking Donaldson, my man.
Okay.
Ding, ding.
So you ran into him, and what happened? How was that encounter?
Well, you know, I'm still, even after having played the show, I still feel like a fan, you know?
Yes, and you were on the fans' tribe.
Yeah, and everyone says I was a poser fan, and that's fine. I really am. Like, we watch it every Wednesday night. We rewatch it again and talk about it. It's truly like one of my most favorite things. So I was at a local gym in the suburbs. I mean, mm-hmm. We're not cool. We live in family land. It's all like every fourth house repeats itself, you know,
right?
The American dream down here. And I look over and there's this guy doing dips on the dips and chins bar. And I'm like, OMG, that's Colby. That is Colby freaking Donaldson. This is crazy. And I was still coming off hot where I had just played the game, you know, and, I went up to him and it had just aired on TV. So I guess it wasn't right after I played, but mm-hmm. I was like, hey, Colby. And he looked at me and he was like, hey man. And I was like, Colby, yeah, you're Colby Donaldson from Survivor. And he's just like, he totally brushed me off. Like, oh no, here's another fan that I have to talk to.
Right.
And I was like, Colby, no. It's okay. Like I played Survivor too. And he looked at me and he was like, I'm sorry, man. I have no idea who you are.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, and I was like, it's okay. I'm just so excited to see you. And my wife actually lived in Los Angeles for 10 years. And we got to talk in, and actually a small world story came around where he had no idea who I was. And it turns out he had been in the same circle of friends in LA that my wife was. And he totally knew who she was.
Yeah.
And she's like, you married the O-Dog? She's like our favorite girl. Get out of here.
The O-Dog. Like,
yeah. So he's like, we got to get together, man. We got to hang out. You got to meet my fiance and all this stuff. So my wife and I actually, we've gotten together with Colby and his now wife a few times, and we partied down and had a fun time. So
okay, wow, wow. I did not see that turn of the story coming. And what's Colby like in real life?
He is as portrayed on TV. I mean, he really is.
Which time?
Yeah, right. Like, you go all the way back to Survivor Australia season 2. He really is an authentic fourth generation cattle rancher from West Texas.
Yeah.
Like, he owns the ranch that's been passed down through the generations. He really is just a solid dude, and no big ego. I mean, he was genuine. He's like, sorry, man, I don't know who you are. How was that experience for you? He knew I wanted to talk about it. He was willing to like entertain that.
But he's sort of over it, right?
He's totally over it. And that's why I told him, like, hey, yeah, you know, I have gotten calls to come back before. And he's like, yeah, I don't get those calls anymore. he's kind of like the old veteran of the game.
He's grizzled, right?
Yeah. And he's actually selling real estate here in Austin, which is what I do. So we've tried to do some business together too.
So you're colleagues now.
We are now colleagues. We're in the same Survivor Alumni Association, and we're colleagues here in Austin. So
okay, so go back. That you sort of mentioned that you had gotten some calls to come back. Now this is very interesting because I think that a lot of people figured that you were going to be in the mix. Certainly from the fans from that tribe, I think a lot of people, if you would have asked them back in 2013, okay, which of the fans is going to come back after this season? I think a lot of people would have said, okay, well, I think Reynolds, maybe we'll see him again. 8 seasons have gone by before anybody from Survivor Karamoan and Malcolm and Andrea even came back for another season. Are you ever in serious consideration, or sort of like a check-in?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Like, it was one of the best experiences of my life. I loved the experience. I loved the show. And I did get some calls, you know, pretty hot right after my season, which I was like just flattered by and honored. And I think the people who watch the show are like, who is Reynolds? Is he just a bro that is good at throwing stuff and, you know, pretty fun to hang out with and average it all trades, but master of none type of guy, or is he really a survivor player? And, I would love to get back and, you know, show what I'm capable of. But the only reason I haven't is, you know, it was time to start a family and build a career. And there was a lot of more kind of urgent, important things for me at this time in my life. So the phone hasn't been ringing much lately, and that's all right.
right.
We love watching it on Wednesday nights and talking about it, and you know, maybe one day. And the only reason to go back would be if I really thought I could win, you know. And I feel like my survivor IQ was I was a C+ student when I got the chance to do it. So I really have, I've been kind of fine tuning it and talking about it a lot and trying to get to a point where I really feel like I have a solid understanding and game plan where I think I could win, because that'd be the only reason to leave my family for, you know, 55, 60 days or whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't think it's that long, Reynolds. It's, you know, 39, and then what do they give it, like a pad on the...
Yeah,
I guess you could sort of like, you know, convince yourself it's that long and then say, boy, that didn't really even feel like 55 days.
Yeah, no, it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
I'm just...
So let's talk about the Game Changers, and let's, you know, specifically talk about Malcolm and what happened to him this season, because, you know, it was back in Karamoan, you guys were the people causing the chaos at some really crazy tribal councils between Malcolm, you know, hold up broing and using your immunity idol. And then you guys basically telling everybody to vote for Philip at the famous Three Amigos Tribal Council. But then maybe the craziest tribal council of them all ultimately does Malcolm in this season. What do you think about what happened to Malcolm?
I mean, first reaction, it was good TV. We jumped out of our seats like, no way. I mean, that was fantastic. In my heart, I know how much Malcolm loves the show and how good he is. And that was tragic. And even when you see, you know, that you do your little exit piece for a minute at the very end, and you could see he was kind of welling up with tears a little bit as it was settling in. I mean, it broke my heart. And, I've seen Malcolm several times since the show. He's a good friend, and it's just tough. Like Game Changers, you kind of got to know that they're going to throw a ton of, there's going to be a lot more Probst action, you know, as opposed to the seasons where they just kind of let it organically unfold. That's always the 21st player in every season, right? Or however many people there are, but there's always the Jeff Probst and what's the show going to do to jack everything up. So I think Malcolm was coming in after having made such huge waves in our season. And he even mentioned that in his like interview before, like, you know, I always came out swinging for the fences. I should probably play it a little more cool and closer to the chest this time. And so I don't think he was ready for that much big movement that early on. And, I think, it led to his undoing, because he's a big threat player in a season with all Game Changers. And, looks like Brad Culpepper has been picking off all the alpha males.
Yeah. It's interesting that these last couple of weeks, Brad had nothing to do with, this week's tribal council, but you know, you had Caleb and Malcolm and JT go out back to back to back. So it really is going to shake up the playing field post merge in a season that we came in and said, okay, wow, there are a lot of bros in this season. I guess no Reynolds and Eddie, but still a lot of bros in this season.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a good visual. I had that same catharsis as you, where all the guys that I work with are about my age. We started our own commercial brokerage, and they've become diehard Survivor fans, and they watch my season on Hulu since they've gotten to know me.
Yeah.
And every season, ensuing season since, and we all talk about it. And so every Thursday when I come in, they've printed out a picture of whoever got voted off with a big X on it. And we have a big wall that we put it on at the office. And we were all sitting back this week, and we're like, dang, look, all the big alphas.
Right.
Are going
and Tony
down.
The week before Beast Mode Cowboy.
Yeah. It's crazy. And, you know, and I can't take credit for this now because you and I talked about maybe doing a podcast before the season. Mm-hmm. But my preseason theory was I looked at this and I saw a lot of alpha males, a lot of game changing, big personality guys. And my theory was going to be that they were going to cannibalize each other and we were going to see a really powerful women's alliance that was going to run through and take this thing to the end. And I still think that that looks like that could be what shakes out here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I actually thought that the guys were going to be more likely to be working together, especially when we saw on Nuku, I thought that it was going to be, you know, Brad and JT and Ozzy. And it looks like in the first couple of days, that was the case. But when Brad had his chance to sort of like, you know, and then JT was having Malcolm on board to sort of, you know, do what Malcolm was trying to do back in Survivor Karamoan, you know, with you and with Eddie and even maybe with Eric to try to keep like a bunch of guys there to sort of have each other's back, like a meat shield type strategy.
Brad does not
seem interested in that.
Yeah, totally. The meat shields going into the merge, right? Where that's when everyone's paradigm shifts and they're like, okay, we're no longer all about strong tribe. We want to pick off people who can win stuff. And the only meat, I mean, you've got Ozzy out there who's the ultimate challenge threat. So Brad has that going for him. But it's interesting. Yeah. I love it. It's keeps you on your toes. So
going back to Malcolm, do you think there's anything that Malcolm could have done differently that you saw from those first four episodes?
Yeah, and we have the hindsight of not being out there. And I know how different it is being on a viewer and being out there on the island where 101 additional things to what they show are going on. But it's funny that Malcolm is such the darling of Survivor that if he gets voted off, you know, all of Twitter laments and it wasn't his fault. But there are definitely things that you can always do. And they counted their six versus the five and they were so confident in that six. But like when one of that six is JT, who's a wild card, you're almost better off, even though it seems counterintuitive to if I were Malcolm to just like secure that you go with the other five and knock someone off on your tribe because JT is such a wild card.
So you think that Malcolm should have been looking into his own tribe to take somebody out and potentially JT, you think?
Yeah, well, everyone in his tribe hates Sandra, right? So, and she's a two-time winner and all that good stuff.
I think that might be a bit of an assumption. I don't think that Jeff Varner hates Sandra, and I don't think that Michaela hates Sandra. And I'm not even sure if Malcolm hated Sandra. I think that that he seemed to like her, but you know, at least was humoring JT in getting rid of her.
I guess hate was probably the wrong word to use, but there is enough. Enough ammunition to want to, there's enough of a target on Sandra where I feel like he could have worked with JT to communicate with the other side and ensure that Sandra goes home. Yeah. And no one on his tribe would have felt like you're Benedict Arnold and, you know, a traitor for doing that. That was somebody who I think everyone would be relieved if she was out of the game. So
yeah.
But, and this is all hindsight, you know, right. We watched it go down and I saw him get voted off and I'm like, oh, you should have done that. If I was out there, I would absolutely, especially early on, you try to keep it as simple as possible and say, look, six is greater than five. Can we all just stick together?
Yeah, that's what Brad Culpepper says.
And it's just, it's amazing how people can't keep it simple, you know, my fans tribe and my experience and everything. It's just like it, the less you can complicate it in those first handful of votes, it seems so straightforward. And that's why it's such a great show. That human element gets involved and everyone has their own agenda. And there are so many different forces at play that literally very simple numbers of X is greater than Y rarely comes to fruition. It's nuts.
Now, Reynolds, it did not come off that easy when you were part of that fans tribe back in fans versus favorites. That was a very complicated group.
Yeah.
A lot of personalities there. So it's not always as easy to do it as it is to say it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to take the advantage of this platform to clear my name a little bit here. In my fans tribe, the biggest thing that I was a proponent of was, we are all going to lose if we don't have the majority going into a merge. Like there's no way the favorites are going to let fans win. That's just, that's not going to happen. Like, we really have to stick together. And ironically, it came out that I was one of the divisive elements in our tribe, which was the opposite of what I was trying to do. So I don't know how all that happened. But it was a shame.
How did that all spiral out of control? Because that was a very divided tribe. And I think that when you are fans coming into a fans versus favorite season, I think that you need to have, some really tight team unity to be able to go up against, all these returning Wily vets. So where did things ultimately go wrong for that tribe?
Here is my big takeaway from that. And I like to, no experience is a failed experience if you learn something from it. And we were all out there, and my takeaway is that people have assumptions of who people are going to be and how they're going to act, and all they need is one indicator to firm up that assumption. So like this whole Cool Kids Alliance that just got blown out of control, and it looks like we're all hanging out together the entire time, like it objectively is not how it went down. But everyone was expecting us to. So we were in the water literally maybe one time. And then they have that amazing shot where they pan back and like they're all watching us. And it's like, man, that is really not how it felt out there. And but they were just waiting for us to look like we were together, to target us as together. And I think that's where it all went wrong, where it's like all of a sudden that was the most alienating thing, was this like aloof, contemptuous Cool Kids Alliance that, I mean, Eddie said something about that in a side interview, but I never felt like it was like that. And even Matt, the beard,
Matt Bischoff,
he's from my hometown. Like he lives a mile from where I grew up. And you talk about like a bro alliance, we bro down hard, and we have a lot of, we're from just a small town outside of Cincinnati that, is a unique area. And Matt and I were like super close, and he broke my heart a couple of times, and he was kind of the swing factor. So
yeah, him and Michael really were the two that was back and forth between that four that you mentioned. And then the, what is it? Sherry, Shamar, Laura, and Allie.
Yep.
No, Allie was with you guys. Allie was with you guys. Who was the other, person?
Julia.
Oh, I'm sorry. How can I forget?
How do you forget Julia?
My bad.
In hindsight, I should have, the last thing to bridge to help it out, it would have been if I talked to Michael more. And, if I could go back, that's what I would have done. Genius guy, fun guy. I sat on the flight, or sat next to him on the international flight home. And tell you what, there's not a better guy to spend a 20-hour flight with. We had about 16 cocktails, and I laughed as hard as I have in my life.
Yeah, everybody loves Snowy.
Snowy's awesome. And then Philip was on the other side of us. So you talk about that bro alliance on the flight home. That was one of my favorite experiences from the whole show.
Was Philip salty with you guys even after the game?
Philip is such a personality on the game, and that really is, he is that character. But the second that it was over, he was salty for like 3 days.
Okay. All right.
He was quiet around Ponderosa, and then he really opened up, and he's super fun. And like I said, on the flight home, he had really let it all go, and he was cracking me up. I was like, man, where was this guy? I would have never voted you out.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about what you've seen with Andrea. Now, I don't believe she's been to a tribal council yet this season. So she's doing so far so good on that front. But she's really emerged to me as a dominant player in the challenges. And I guess she always had that. She wins an individual immunity along the way in Karamoan. She wins her way back into the game on Redemption Island in her first season. But she's really such a standout in the challenges. And I feel like we forget that about her.
Such a good point. Andrea Belke is a challenge dominator, dude. And what killed us, really, we matched up fans versus favorites going back to my season. We matched up so well, and we would have had them. And the differentiating factor was Andrea and Brenda versus we had Julia and Laura. And like Andrea and Brenda were, they are so tough, man. And what's great for her though is nobody talks about it. Nobody calls it out, so she's not like ever targeted as that challenge threat, but man, she is, I mean, she balanced on that doghouse in the water for like 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is tough, man. She is super tough. She's the country girl from Wisconsin, riding horses. I mean, she's like this New York City talk show host now, and she's beautiful and it's great and her show's fantastic. But like, she's a tough country girl, man. She gets out there and got nothing but love for Dre. I really hope she does well this season. She's got all the, she's the complete package. She's got the physical element, the social element, great head on her shoulders. So I'm pulling for her big time.
Well, she's so competitive, and we saw that a lot in Survivor Karamoan, where to the point where she was overplaying probably at different points during the game, especially post-merge, and then she ultimately became a target. And I was very worried about her coming into this season, to the point where I thought that she could be one of the first boots, because I thought that people were going to look at her and go back to everything with that, oh, she was tight with Francesca, and then she voted out Francesca, and can you trust her? Is she too schemey? And I haven't seen any hint of that. Like, I was 100% wrong in what I thought about Andrea coming into this season.
Yeah, I think she's got a lot of self-awareness as to what people probably were expecting out of her, and we haven't seen a big edit from her so far this season. And I think that was a really intentional strategy that she took on, where she's like, I gotta super slow play this thing initially. And she's always aware of what's going on, and I'm sure we'll see the very active, manipulative Andrea come to light here. But I think she's smart that she's saying, I'm not, and obviously she hasn't been to tribal yet, and that's when that's when it all hits the fan. But I think that's the best thing she could have done, is just fly under the radar for 5 or 6 votes and then do her groundwork. And I think she's in a good position, because no one's really targeting her. What do you think?
Yeah, that group with Ozzy and Sarah Lucina and Andrea. I mean, you have like 3 real standouts. I mean, Troyzan, he's no Reynolds when it came to knocking over those. How quickly you would have been like Brad Culpepper out there. But I mean, he's no slouch. Zeke is great at the puzzles. I mean, that is a really great group in terms of these challenges. I'm sure that they are not happy to have that group broken up this week.
Yeah, no, they're what we were after the tribe shuffle in my season. You know, they're just, it was a lock. It was summer camp,
right?
That
was a dominant post-swap group. And I feel like that's not really talked about a lot in terms of like these uneven swap tribes, but it was you, Malcolm, Eddie, Eric Reichenbach, and then you had Andrea,
had
Brenda, and you had Sherry too, right?
Right, and it was always off, so one person had to sit out, so Sherry sits out, and we just crush.
right. And then the other side, famously was, Philip Cochran, Dawn, Corinne, Julia, Matt, and Mike.
And you know what? Another fun takeaway that I think will be fun for people on your show, the stuff that doesn't get edited, that you don't get to see, something that people are going to miss out on now on this Game Changer season that I got to experience, is when Malcolm and Andrea are on the same tribe together at night, they sing.
Okay. What do they sing?
Everything. They know, like, they're like a jukebox. You could call something out and they know every word to every song, and they would just sing these country songs, and just, it was like camp. It was like summer camp. That's why I always call it summer camp. It was like the fire would be going. We'd be laying in the shelter. We had just won another challenge, had another reward, and they would just be singing all night. It was the greatest. I was like, this is awesome. And then we merged and everything went to hell again. But
yeah, I know that we didn't get a chance to see it. Do you think that they would have worked together if they would have met up after another swap or a merge?
I think so, because I think they are equivalents as far as being students of the game. And, they say the professional poker players would rather play with another professional any day than with someone who doesn't even really play as often, because that person's a wild card. So I think they would have.
I'd love to get your take on. We saw this week after the challenge that Debbie had this explosion with Brad Culpepper, and she's back at camp ranting. And, you know, it's some of the most uncomfortable things that we've seen on Survivor. Certainly reminiscent of some of the stuff that you guys were going through in all your experiences with Shamar, sort of, and the infighting going on with your tribe. Did you see any parallels between that situation and what you went through in Caramoan?
Yeah, I mean, I was even telling, you know, my buds at work, Debbie, God love her. Once your mind flips out there, I mean, there's enough just physical stress and mental stress. Once your mind flips, there's usually not much bouncing back from it. And like, I feel like she's even more than Shamar, maybe like a Brandon Hance. Not that she's violent, but like, I could see her like voting herself off or doing something crazy like that. Because
I'm pissed.
Like, she's going to be the author of her own fate.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that we are at that point where she may have to be removed from the game? Or do you think that she can come back from this?
I don't think she comes back from it. She's got obviously some delusions, and we don't know the truth of who could really balance and not balance. Clearly what we saw. And then I loved where they edited and they went back and made her eat her own words. That was beautiful. That was the first, I think.
Now, but, you guys had such a fractured group. Was there any sort of trouble figuring out who was going to do what parts of certain challenges, especially when you guys had been losing so much?
Yeah, that was the big fight for us. Was Shamar really wanted to dictate who did what, and he wanted he had certain roles he wanted to do in every challenge, and that creates some conflict, whether you win or whether you lose. Like, it even went back. He and I, the beginning of the end for us was I demanded that I be the one to throw the bags on our very first challenge where we came back and won immunity in that first episode, and he really wanted to do it. And he was even mad that we won with me drawing. So like there's a lot of ego that gets involved in the challenge stuff. And if you can't play together as a team, bad things happen. It really carries over into the social game big time, which I feel like people don't talk about that a whole lot, but it really is true.
How excited were you when Malcolm almost led his tribe all the way back, throwing those rings? Was that impressive for you?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
Could you have beat Malcolm in a ring toss?
I think Malcolm's glad I wasn't out there. He knows he's incredible, and I'm a little bit older and a little bit tougher than he is.
So even older, you could still beat him in a ring toss.
Oh yeah. But Malco, he's incredible, man. He played football at Dartmouth. Mm-hmm. I didn't even play college football. Yeah. Malcolm's a stud. And then he went spearfishing in Micronesia, teaching English. He's full package. He's undeniably a cool bro. So,
okay. Speaking of bros, I think a lot of people want to know, have you kept in touch with Eddie after all these years?
Oh yeah. Eddie is, and I wish I had more drama for you. I feel like everything's good news with me here. Yeah. Eddie is one of the most sincere people. And as I've had these big life changes, getting married and having a child, and he just sends like the nicest texts and things to you. Like, man, you deserve all of these great blessings, and I'm truly so happy for you. Like, really mature, nice stuff. And then you call him, and he's same goofy old Eddie, and he's got hilarious stories about what he did that weekend. And I get vicariously a kick out of all that stuff. So, and he flew to Austin one time and hung out. He and Malcolm both flew here, and we spent a few nights out in Austin, and that was something else.
If Eddie made it into the final three, that let's say Cochran didn't win that final immunity challenge, and he gets voted out in that spot. If Eddie makes it to the final three with Dawn and with Sherry, is Eddie the winner of Survivor Caramoan?
I tell you what, I was campaigning hard. So he had me in the jury campaigning for it every day. And I was starting to really turn some momentum for Team Eddie. Mm-hmm. So I think there was definitely a real shot.
I know. He was very well liked on that jury.
Who I would compare it to Ty's season. What was her, Koran, the girls?
Aubrey, Michelle, and Ty?
Yeah. And so Michelle wins Koran. you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have to be the most masterful in, of every sequence of the game. Sometimes it just shuffles out. Or like, who do you pick from the three?
Yeah.
And everyone loves Eddie.
You voted for Cochran to win the game. Was there any even chance that you were going to vote anybody else? Because you didn't seem like you were close with Cochran in the game.
I know, which was another thing that was another relationship that was never never shown. And I told everybody, I said, way back when we first merged, I was like, Cochran is going to win this game. I know you all want me and Malcolm and Eddie gone, but look at what's happening. He's played with Dawn before. She does whatever he wants. Anyways, he ends up winning. I absolutely voted for him. He deserved to win. And Cochran and I have a lot more in common than you may think. We've got very similar tastes in music. A lot of the downtime where you're just talking about anything just to fill time. He and I had a lot of pretty hilarious connections through stuff like that. So I liked him a lot. He even confided in me one time on the show. He was emotional towards the loved ones' visit. He had some family issues going on, and he was kind of tearing up a little bit. And he's like, I just got to get to the loved ones' visit. What do I have to do? Can I work with you and Malcolm? And that was like a sincere moment where he was really ready to work with us. And then, you know, emotionally, he kind of pulled it back together. And then he was, you know, intelligently analyzed the situation and he played it right. You know, you can't say that he should have gone with us because he went the way he went and he won the game. So,
you talk about that? I don't think I've ever really discussed this with anybody from that jury in Karamoan. So, of course, there's the famous moment where Brenda starts questioning Dawn and she gets into, you know, you humiliated me. That day you couldn't find your teeth. I want you to take your teeth out. I want you. And she's like, okay, Brenda, like, you know, fair enough. And then she keeps pushing. Eventually Dawn does it. Was this something, was Brenda sort of like at Ponderosa before this talking about like, you know what, tonight I'm going to make Dawn take her teeth out. Was that something that was sort of like, described pre-tribal council, or she just sprung it on you guys?
Great question. Brenda was quiet, stoic and calculated, and she wasn't telling anybody what she was doing.
She didn't tip her hand on that.
It wasn't like, I want to make a big scene out of this, or, you know, there was no motivation about creating a event there. The only motivation there was she was sincerely hurt by what Donna had done and she was going to get her back. And that was so, man, that floored me. That was crazy.
Yeah. And then when you guys were sitting there in the jury, was anybody like, hey, all right, Brenda, she's had enough. Come on.
No. Everybody wanted it to happen.
Everybody wanted it to happen. Why? Was that like a cathartic moment for you guys because you had been more upset with Dawn because you guys felt more betrayed by Dawn than by Cochran?
Yeah, Dawn, God bless her. And it is a game. So that's what it is. But she had betrayed everybody. And she was in with everybody at some point. And she was, you're out there and it's stressful. And she's the mom you want to confide in, you know? Mm-hmm. And she just stabbed ruthlessly everyone in the back while at the same time flying under this banner of altruism. And people just felt, for whatever reason, because of who she is in real life and who she had to be in that game, people felt, I mean, like truly betrayed. And there was a lot of animosity and people wanted to see it happen, I think.
Because you had a moment with Dawn, right? Where you had the idol and you showed it to her, correct? Am I remembering this right? Right, yep. After the merge. And then she has a confessional and she's like, you know what, Reynolds, you shouldn't have done that. Shame on you. I'm going to tell everybody that you had the idol.
Oh, I tell you what. And Rob, I don't know if you had this experience in your season. And I took a humble meal of humility and self-awareness watching my season. I had no idea she felt like that. Zero.
But isn't that good on her? Isn't that, you know, what a gamer?
Oh yeah. Good on her.
Cause it's tough. I mean, we talk about this a lot, the role of this person who the mom is, cause it's a double-edged sword. And, you know, every season we seem to have somebody who is like the mother figure who's out there, except not really this season, but we have that figure, you know, whether it's Sunday last season where somebody is the older woman who people feel comfortable with, people confide in them, but then if they ever break that confidence, it is like the ultimate betrayal. And, you know, Cochran was sitting there with two women in Sherry and Dawn who potentially people felt that way towards.
Yeah. Even like in, if you talk about Brenda's talk to her in Final Tribal and then like my talk to her, I was just like, I just want you to own it. Own the game that you played. You really did do all this diabolical, crazy stuff. And that's what this arena calls for. And you did it. Everyone just wanted to hear her own it and not still get credit for being the sweet mom out there. You weren't the mom out there. You were the, you were tough. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But it's, I don't know. It's, and she is in life a really wonderful person. And
great that was person, Dawn.
Another, that was another big takeaway for me. In my 20s, I bounced around. I lived in overseas and I lived in a bunch of different cities, a bunch of different places, a lot of like short experiences. So I would commit to each of these experiences fully. And the friendships I would make would be sincere friends for life and things like that. So this short experience for me on Survivor, I really just felt like another life experience for me. So it was harder for me to compartmentalize things and be like, oh, it's just a game. I'm going to just really win. I'm going to get all these people and trick them all. And it's going to be great. And now that I've watched the show more and I've done it and I see how, even though we played super hard against each other afterwards, we're all friends. I'm like, dang, if I could have just gone back knowing this, I wouldn't have been so emotional about how I felt. You know, how you feel doesn't mean anything. And, but how you make other people feel, that means everything. So that's the secret
in Survivor or in life.
Well, I'm talking about Survivor, but yeah, Rob,
probably applies to both.
Probably applies to both.
Yeah.
If you can look objectively at yourself, and my wife, she's a yoga teacher, well into like meditation and stuff now. If you can analyze yourself objectively without emotion and see it as it is, that's so beneficial. But then on the flip side, if you can see how you make everyone else feel, yeah, that's everything.
But just so. That those two things that you're talking about too, you know, I think that the self-reflection is so important, you know, for first time players, but even more so for these game changers of like reflecting on what did they learn from their first game. But then that idea of how you're making the other people feel, not necessarily what you're doing, because we have talked about this a lot on the podcast. If somebody could be like completely open and honest about everything, where we've seen survivors like, oh, you know what, actually I was thinking about voting you out and I'm not going to, and I just want to be completely honest about you, like, well, that doesn't make the person feel good. But just like sort of being very mindful of the feelings that you're making other people experience in your presence. And yeah. I always like to credit Jeremy Collins and even totally. Michelle Fitzgerald of being people who really excelled in that area. And I think it's sometimes a hard thing to express on the show.
Yes. And it's subtle, you know, it's very subtle the way that you impinge on other people's space and how it makes them feel. And another perfect example of my season, and again, this is like so arrogant, I just keep bringing everything back to me, but these are experiences that
I mean, what do we have to talk to you about a season that you weren't on?
Yeah. Accurate experiences I can draw from. When we had our super swap, you know, and we had my summer camp experience with, you know, Malcolm and Andrea and all of them, one of the people on that tribe was Eric.
Yes.
And Eric's whole experience out there, from my observation, was he was so just damaged from what had happened to him in his first season, coming in as a super fan and, you know, having happened what happened. So he was like very defensive, very detached, did not want to commit to anything. Cause if you fully commit to anything and look passionate about something, that opens the opportunity for you to look foolish, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of looked at him as like not a big wave maker out there, but I was like, but I do need to address that he's here and talk to him so that he knows that, you know, we can all work together. So I gave him kind of like a half-assed, like, hey, let's walk on the beach. You know, how are you? How's the game? Yeah, we should really work together. And it was in hindsight, I'm like, wow, that was really half-assed. But while I was out there, I was like, okay, good. Check that box. I talked to Eric. We are good. Now who else do I need to talk to? And then I watched the show, and on his confessional, he's like, Reynolds gave me this used car salesman vibe.
Yeah.
And he gets whatever he wants in his life. And he gave me the 3 minutes that he felt I deserved and moved right on. And I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I did. That's exactly how I made him feel. And it's not that I don't have respect for him or anything like that, but I was just in the game and I'm like analyzing, like talk to this person done. And it's funny where it's like, God, if I had just known like to talk to him like a person and have a real moment that doesn't even have to be about the game, then there actually would have been an opportunity for us to work together.
Right, to be present with him and really, you know, foster that relationship more so than have it be really transactional, because that really rarely works.
It rarely works. Yeah. It's so true.
So let me ask you about some other things. One last thing on that Brenda Final Tribal Council. That after that Final Tribal Council, after that had happened, could you just tell me a little bit about what the mood was with that group following that really emotional Final Tribal?
Oh, man. It was like Dawn was taken to, you know, an emotional hospital. You know, they had staff that kind of gave her some time away. It was heavy, man.
So they're working with her. And then, so what's everybody else doing?
I had this awesome moment where I was in a room by myself, and you know they're always adding people to Ponderosa. And for this final one, they're like, "Hey, we're going to move you into the room with four beds. It can be you, Malcolm, Eddie, and we're going to put Cochran in there." And I was like, "Sweet, great." So I'm moving my stuff in there. Everyone's outside cracking beers, getting ready to just break down everything that happened. And it was just Cochran and I in that room together. And I was just putting my bags in there, and he was still had literally just come down from that final tribal. And he looked at me and he was like, "Reynolds, did I just win Survivor?" And boom, that moment was like, I didn't say anything. And I just looked at him and we just kind of shared that space for a few beats. And I was just like, wow, what a moment. Like, and I was happy, you know, I was like, God, of course I want to win for myself. But like, if knowing what I know about all these people, the guy who's written a paper on this and had one experience, and then he gloriously came back and was triumphant. I was like, you can't write this shit. This is fantastic. And then we had a great time that night, and we partied down.
You know, I've never really asked anybody about like what that night is like following the Final Tribal Council. I know what it was like in the Amazon, and it was a pretty fun party the night of day 39 after that Final Tribal Council. But I don't know. Is that what goes on? You guys had a party that night?
Yeah, we And Malcolm's a bartender, and we got the blender going, and he was basically making, it was like vanilla ice cream, peanut butter, and rum. And we all had like 12 of those. I think we each gained 10 or 15 pounds.
Wow.
And then, felt much better, but Dawn was wounded.
Yeah.
Sherry was always kind of a weird outsider. And then, Snowy, Eddie and Malcolm, and Snowy, I mean, we've been ripping it out for a good 4 or 5 days already.
You guys
already,
have been over there for a while, sure.
So we were kind of like, welcome to the party. We're the hosts.
Yeah.
We may not have won Survivor, but we are winning Ponderosa right now.
Sure. So then you were on the beach that day that Brandon Hance got taken out of the game in that very memorable scene where, you know, Jeff like pulls Brandon aside and is like giving him that rub down. What was your impression of everything that was going on watching that unfold in the first person?
Absolute relief, because we were just getting decimated, and we had lost every challenge.
And just to set the scene, I think that Corinne comes in and they say, "Hey, the favorites have decided to basically fold on the immunity challenge today, and we are ready to go to tribal council."
And I'm looking at the big giant blocks that you have to push and the puzzle you have to put together. And I'm like, we're going to get crushed again as I walked in there. And then Corinne says, we're going to volunteer tribal now. So it was just relief. And also what had happened before that was 3 days and nights of nonstop rain.
Yeah.
And that's when people, you know, people go crazy after 48 hours of the rain. I mean, that's when the crazy comes out. And
do you think that had an impact on Brandon?
Absolutely. I mean, it had an impact on me and everybody else. You're human. Like you're just getting Chinese water torture drops on you and it's cold.
Right. And you guys had a very lackluster shelter. I remember Matt Bischoff like having like a corpse hands and feet.
Yeah. It wasn't until we got to the merge where I was like, it could be like this. Like we were just losing on all fronts over there. So I think I think he'd gone a little rain nuts, and I was just relieved. I was like, thank God. Okay, this gets us one step closer to the merge where hopefully things can shuffle up the deck and I have another chance.
Did you guys have any idea what was going on with Brandon on that favorites tribe?
No, zero idea.
They sort of like kept it well hidden.
Yeah.
Were you concerned about there being like a fist fight between Brandon and Philip on the beach that afternoon?
I mean, and they, you know, they didn't let Brandon come to the finale. So right. there clearly was a legal concern that he could go violent.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Philip wouldn't throw blows.
Right.
But Philip's got a mouth on him.
What about as you were sitting there, was it more tense in real life than it was on TV? Or did it become like more of a TV moment with between the music and the editing and it would seem more dramatic on the show?
No, it was super intense, but none of the intensity was on us. It was all relief on us. It was a giant pressure release on us where we thought we were this crazy, dysfunctional, decimated tribe, and to see that something bad was going on over there. So I think we were all watching in great relief and kind of enjoying it, but it was intense. It was definitely serious.
After the merge, there's a moment where it looks like you guys are going to get something together. The favorite sort of suss that out between some leaks on your side, which we don't need to necessarily get into. So you have your idol, and there's the vote where I think you guys are going for Andrea. Was that who you were trying to put the votes on when Michael Snow ultimately went home?
Yeah.
There's a point where you have the idol. Malcolm also has his own idol, and you stand up and you're going to play the idol on yourself. Is that correct?
Yep.
And Malcolm says to you, hey, hold up, bro. Okay. The votes are coming for me. Play the idol on me. And this is what we need to do. You give Malcolm your idol, and it ends up being Michael Snow who goes home.
Yeah. Or Corinne. I think Corinne went home that one.
I think that Corinne had gone home the previous tribal
council. Yeah, that's right. Corinne private. Yeah. Yeah. So Snowy goes home. And the hold up bro moment. God. I mean, I thought that was like a beautiful display of friendship and loyalty.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm like, what a glorious thing. And then it didn't work, but I was like, hey, what a wonderful gesture. I really thought it was like this wonderful, sweet thing. And then the show comes on and the true Survivor fans and the gamers out there just, they had a different opinion of that.
Right. Well, Malcolm, he had his own idol and he ends up playing your idol on him. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm using the Survivor Wiki as my source. Malcolm also voted for you at that tribal council.
Yeah.
Why did you ever get an explanation of why he did that?
No. Well, God, I mean, that
what was he going for
and
there?
He still didn't. And so even when it's all said and done, he must have felt really bad about it.
I don't think he did.
Or I guess he didn't want to confront me about it because he knows like what kind of person I am. And he never said anything to me in Ponderosa. He flew to Texas. We had a big, wonderful time here in Texas. He stayed with me, never brought it up. And then, that show airs and I'm like, what the hell, dude? Mm-hmm. I knew you had an idol. That came out while we were out on a show, but I didn't know you voted for me. And I think he was just trying to, I mean, he's playing his game. He's trying to protect himself. And I was playing my game where, I mean, I played an idol before for no reason on my fans tribe when Laura went home. And my theory has been and always will be in Survivor, all you have to secure 100% is that you are there when the sun comes up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And anything can change. Anything can be different. And who cares if you have an idol and you even think maybe play it and then go maybe find another one, or maybe there's going to be a tribe reshuffle, or who knows what's going to happen. But like,
so you're very upset with JT for not only not playing his idol, but also for not even bringing it to the tribal council this past week.
Yeah. Don't be so covetous with the idols. And Andrea, she would have won our season had she just played her idol and gone to the end.
Yeah.
You know, just play it. Who cares? It's going to be reintroduced. You maybe find it again. You maybe don't. It's the hidden immunity idol has shifted the game huge, but that's not the only way to win the game. And you got to be there tomorrow. If you are not there when the sun comes up tomorrow because you got voted off, Idol or no Idol, it doesn't matter. You have no chance.
You sound like Sandra. Anybody but me, three more days.
Totally. She's two for two. So I just, so back to my story with my idol, I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to play it for me. And I know I'll be here tomorrow and maybe something will happen. And all along, this was not like I got taken advantage of. I mean, the whole Malcolm thing was an intentional strategy for me where I'm like, here's a guy I know I can relate with and we'll be friends. Here's a fan of favorites that are never going to work with us, except for maybe the one guy who just ran his season. So he's not in the fraternity with all of them. He didn't go to all the parties with them. He didn't go to a finale with them. He's not as tight with all of them. And he's my one chance. So if he's going to ask, so I told him about my idol because I was like, hell yeah, this is the only leverage I have. Why the hell would you work with me? I'm just another fan. But I have an idol. I will do whatever it takes. Work with us. And so for me, it was no problem. And I was fully prepared to give it to him or Eddie or Corinne or anybody. Mm-hmm. I just never had information.
Yeah.
So I didn't care about playing idols. I would have played them for anyone. I could just never get intel out there. I mean, I truly never was on the right side of the vote once the yeah. entire time I was out there, except for Philip.
So with the Malcolm thing, it'd be a great question to ask him sometime. I'm not sure if we ever asked him that, maybe in his exit interview from that season, of why he put a vote on you that night. Maybe he was just trying to make his vote disappear, or maybe he thought that the votes were coming for you, but you were going to play the idol, and then he got spooked about where the votes ultimately were going. So that's a good question for him. Let's talk about that Hold Up Bro Tribal Council as well. And it's interesting because there were... how many people in the game at that point? Was that a 9-person vote, or that was 10?
Ooh,
I think it might have been 10 at that point. But you know, we've talked about this so many times. It's one of the most famous tribal councils that there is. And you know, how many times, yes, you guys got Philip out, but was there a way that you guys could have gotten more on that night? Do you ever have any regrets about how the Three Amigos Tribal Council went?
Yeah, what's funny about that is for all the idols we played and all of the show that we put on, the only reason that worked is because Eric voted for Philip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of funny to think about it like that. Eric was the clinch vote, and we didn't have enough immunity barely even to make it all happen. And so that's kind of funny where it's like, we probably could have done it even without all that idol play.
Right. So how would that have happened if Eric didn't flip, if he would have voted for Eddie? So but he did play the hidden immunity idol, right? So those votes wouldn't have counted.
So it wouldn't have counted. Right.
OK. So then it would have been still three votes for Philip.
Yeah. So the way that we could have made that last, that was our Alamo, right? We rallied. We threw everything we had out there, every bomb we had. And then when the dust cleared, it shook everybody up big time, and they were scrambling and freaked out. But then we just went home one after another after that, you know? So in hindsight, if we could have used less idols and threatened idols and not played them and really just talked to Eric, because mm-hmm. it was pretty common knowledge that Eric hates anybody with a big ego. And Philip's ego is, the biggest one on the island. So if we had just worked
Philip
with Shepherd, Eric,
you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. So if we just worked with Eric and kind of made this thing happen and put on a big show, but hold back some of those idols,
mm-hmm.
then we had some more plays, but okay. we had no plays left after that.
How much did you guys talk about that, Three Amigos Tribal Council? Like, how much was that choreographed before you went to that tribal council?
Eddie was adamant. Eddie never trusted Malcolm. Eddie and I shared everything, and we would have done anything for each other. And Malcolm was an amigo, but Eddie's like, I don't trust him.
Did Malcolm tell you guys he had the two idols at that point?
Yes. And he said, okay, we'll play these at tribal. And so he told us he had them. And Eddie
and
said,
you had immunity. You had the individual immunity, correct?
I had the individual immunity. And so Malcolm has two idols in his possession. So Eddie says, and he showed them to us, and Eddie says, great, give me one. And Malcolm said, no, I'll do it at tribal. And so Eddie immediately after that was like, bro, I don't trust him. And I think really at the end of the day, Malcolm had every intention of playing one for Eddie all along. And, but he had found both of them. I think he's theatrical. I think he wanted to put on a big, big production. Mm-hmm. And he executed it beautifully. And I'm so proud to have been part of that Amigo Alliance and that tribal council. And I thought it went down great. But
the thing that we always come back to is, was it a mistake to say, all right, we're voting for Philip tonight. Yeah. What are you guys going to do? Rather than saying, okay, I know we're not going home. You guys figure it out and just sort of like sit back and let them sort of start to have that discussion between each other.
Absolutely. So it was a beautiful theatrical moment, but had we just shown everything and said, guess what? The three of us aren't going home, and then said nothing after that. And if we had worked with Eric behind the scenes before that to vote Philip, mm-hmm. I think we could have pulled it off without playing him. Yeah. And then we have two idols. And then hey, who wins between Malcolm, Reynolds, and Eddie in the final three?
And just to bring it full circle what ultimately happened to Malcolm, in this modern day Survivor where people are standing up and moving around, would that have changed anything? Could you go and like whisper in Eric's ear, hey, Eric, why don't you do this? Do you think that if somebody had done that at the time, would that have made things easier?
I think ours was one of the first ones where whispering happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and, but no one was getting up out of their seats. So you were like confined to only whisper to someone who was within arm's reach of you.
Yeah. Okay.
But, and now that's changing things. The game's always changing.
Yes. You know? The game is evolving. Now, Reynolds, coming up is going to be season 36 of Survivor. It's going to be on, you know, 1 year from now. Season 16 was Fans versus Favorites 1. Season 26 was Fans versus Favorites 2. Do you think it's time for Survivor to revisit the Fans versus Favorites format in season 36?
Oh, yeah. And it would be a dream come true to come back as a favorite, if people would believe that I was a favorite.
But right. Well, Eric Reichenbach played as a fan in season 16, came back as a favorite in season 26. There is sort of that history of somebody who was a fan coming back and being a favorite the next time around.
Oh, that'd be a dream come true. And I love that format, fans versus favorites.
Because a lot of fans don't like it. A lot of the people that we talk to are sort of like, oh, fans versus favorites, whether it's on Survivor, whether it's on Big Brother. A lot of people, and I think that the way that your tribe, the fans, were sort of decimated, they feel like that it's not a fair fight and people don't necessarily want to see it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a fair fight. And that's why I want to come back as a favorite and then at least have a 50% better chance.
Yeah. I've said before, I think it's actually, I would not mind another fans versus favorites as long as we get, because Survivor has really demonstrated over the last couple of years that they can find people who are these super duper fans, you know, that we've seen like a Zeke and like an Adam Klein,
totally.
David Wright, and people like that who really know the show particularly well and then go out there and play. And I think that would be really fun. Whereas I know you've said that you were a fan of the show, but I think it's probably safe to say I know Snowy's a fan. I know Matt Bischoff's a fan. I know Sherry, that I think her son is even named Colby to bring that full circle.
Right.
But I think Laura was a fan. But I think that, you know, there may have been some recruits in the mix also.
Yep.
In that tribe. So it wasn't exactly that these were the diehards that knew the game so well. I also think there's something interesting to the idea of a fans versus favorites, but then also like a third tribe of maybe either, you know, famous people or something else like that, where you can, you know, play with the format even more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the format, and I agree with you 1,000% that the Survivor fan base is incredible. And there's so many people that deserve a chance to play, and the forum of fans favorites, where not only do they get their dream come true, but then they get to play against people that they've mm-hmm. had all of these feelings about watching them in their living room. I just know from a fan perspective, and yes, okay, debatably, like I'm not as at that time, maybe not as big a fan as Zeke or someone else, but like, man, it was pretty powerful to see that helicopter and John Cochran gets off and all these people. And it's just like, no way. Mm-hmm. It's from the fan perspective, it's an incredible experience.
It's just interesting because people have soured on the fans versus favorites format so much after Karam Owen. And I think that Karam Owen is actually an underrated season, especially in the post-merge. I think that from the time you guys merge on, I don't really think that there's a dull episode. You know, it is a very not fun pre-merge between all of the infighting going on and Brandon Hance, and it's very lopsided between even post-swap. But I think from that merge episode on, I really think it's a very strong season.
I think so, too. I was very proud to be part of it. You want your season to be a good season. There's definitely that element. So I agree with you. I thought then definitely post-merge on, just like you said, it's a great season.
And the original fans versus favorites, many people say, is one of, if not the best, one of the top three or four seasons of the show. So it's just
totally
so funny
agree.
That people have really completely done a 180 on the fans versus favorites format.
Yeah, that's news to me. I didn't know that people weren't into it. I thought that the Micronesia, God, I loved that season. That was incredible. So that's why when they were like, you're on fans versus favorites too, I was like, what? And I was so naive. Everyone else saw something coming. And I was in the, even in the pre-show where it was just 9 other people. And I'm like, huh, where's the other 10? And like, this is how naive I was. Mm-hmm. And then the helicopter rolls in and all of these returning players get off. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And yeah. Meanwhile, I see that everybody else in their pregame interviews were like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a returning season of all returning players are going against. It's like everyone knew except me. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be fun. All right. Well, Reynold, this was so nice to catch up. Was there anything else that you wanted to let the listeners know?
I can leave you with one funny story from my season, if that's something that we have time
yes.
for. So one of my biggest goals, as with a lot of people, is to get to the loved one's visit, because to give that experience to a loved one, you know, is just such a dream come true. And our season, we had, you got to bring 2 people.
Right.
And so I actually got to have my mother and father, who are both, you know, still live in Cincinnati in the house that I grew up in. And so this was like a huge international, awesome trip for them. And when I got voted off, one of the producers comes up to me and they say, I've got to tell you something hysterical about your parents on the loved ones visit, because it takes 4 days to mobilize and get people out here. So they got to come out on the trip. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Like, that means everything to me. And I'm sure that they enjoyed it. And they're like, oh yeah, they enjoyed it. Your dad was the life of the party. He was just, you could not wipe the smile off of his face. And he was jovial, having the best time. And then we were at dinner one night, and it was the night that you got voted off in tribal, and we had to pull your parents aside. And we said, Mr. and Mrs. Topher, we're so sorry, but tonight Reynolds was voted off the show. And thinking it was going to be just this terrible thing for them. And my dad looked at him, he said, do we get to stay? And they said, well, yeah, you get to stay. He said, is the beer still free? He said, you can have as much beer as you want. He said, who cares? We'll see Ren when we get back.
Yeah.
Cheryl, come on. And he said he went right back and like literally picked up from the same beat of the story he was telling, jumped right back into it, was not fazed at all that I'd been voted off, and had the time of their lives.
That's so funny. I heard that story a lot the opposite way, where, you know, they sort of like pull the person like, oh, your loved one got voted, and they're like devastated and they're like going home immediately. That's very funny.
The Topher's were, bottoms up. And they said the people there, all the loved ones, were fantastic. Like,
yeah.
My dad, of all people, befriended Cochran's dad.
Yes.
And they were like best buddies.
Are they barbecuing now?
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about full circle. It's just funny how things shake out. So,
yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, great stuff, Reynold. You could follow Reynold on Twitter at Reynold Topher. Are you live tweeting at all?
No, I am. I'm so. I talk about the show a lot, but I don't tweet about the show a lot. I feel like I'm always nervous. I feel like the fans are so. They're all so intellectual about it, and it's intimidating sometimes.
Yeah. I'm looking at your Twitter. Are you a Patriots fan, Reynold?
Oh yeah.
How'd that happen? Time. You seem like such a nice guy.
I was. My first job was in Boston, and I was broke, and I found some roommates on Craigslist. and we couldn't afford to do anything. And I lived there in the city, and they were all diehard Patriots fans. So this goes back, I mean, 10 plus years when I was there. So, it was, I caught the bug from them, and they were great guys. I'm still friends with them. So I'm not a total poser. I didn't jump on the bandwagon. I was there.
Okay. All right. Well, Reynold, so nice to catch up. Glad to hear that everything is going well. Next time you're hanging out with the Culpster. This will be a fun test. Could you mention that you talk to me and see if he knows who I am?
I will. And I'm... my feelings are going to be so hurt when he lights up like he did when he found out who my wife was.
our dog. Oh, man. That guy's the best. No, I don't know if he's going to say that. I was technically on a season with him. Maybe he might remember who I am.
I think I'm pretty sure that he does, Rob.
He might have blacked it out.
But Colbs did say, he said, no season is like your first season.
Right. No, I get that from him, that he really he was all about Australia, and then the other two times not as fun for the Culpster.
Yeah, he's like, man, you just realize how much it's going to suck. Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
He was going full tilt the first time, and then not so much the second two times.
Yep. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
All right, Reynold, thank you so much. Great catching up with you, and all the best to you and the family.
Thank you for the time. I'm flattered, honored that you had me on the show, and love everything that you do, Rob. And thanks, man. Talk to you hopefully sooner than later.
All right. Take care, buddy.
All right. Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Reynold Topher here on the podcast. Very fun to catch up with Reynold. And those are some good Caramo and behind the scenes stories that I had never heard before. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. And I always feel like it's fun, especially when it's somebody that we haven't heard from in a while, to catch up and hear what different people are up to and get some survivor stories that we never have gotten out there before. So hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. So we got a lot of podcasts in the can already this week between the know-it-alls, the exit interview. Thought we had great shows this week with the Codys. It was going really well for a while with Randy Bailey. All those shows are up on robhasawebsite.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, so you don't miss our next podcast coming up. I'll be back with David Bloomberg to discuss why JT lost. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.